I knew nothing when I started. I literally have a slide when I give talks. Here's what I started with. It's a big zero, nothing. So yeah, the earlier you can get something like that, the earlier the light bulb goes on, the more time you have to affect your plan. And time's probably the best, you know, real estate and investing hack in the world, because you can make mistakes, recover from them.
Welcome to the Physicians and Properties Podcast, the show where we teach you how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want.
Doctor!
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 Now, here's your host, Dr. Alex Schlow.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of the Physicians and Properties Podcast. I am so excited you're here. Today, we have an absolutely incredible guest, someone who's incredibly inspiring, someone who I look up to greatly, Dr. Tom Burns. Dr. Burns is an entrepreneur, retired orthopedic surgeon, and a physician for the United States ski team. He has over 25 years of real estate investing experience and has acquired or developed over $700 million of real estate. He's a co-founder and principal of Presario Ventures, a private real estate company focused on apartment development and private equity in Texas and the Sun Belt. Dr. Burns is the author of Why Doctors Don't Get Rich, a best-selling book for those who want to live life to the fullest. He's a sought-after speaker and mentor and has been financially independent for over a decade. He is the founder of the Rich Life Mastermind, created to help people create financial independence so they can control their future and travel to exotic places with him. This is a fantastic episode. I'm so honored to get the opportunity to talk to Dr. Tom Burns. In this episode, we'll talk about his journey from medical school to orthopedic surgery, getting started investing in real estate, in which he bought some condominiums, first one cash flowing just $150, but how that stack led to ultimately a portfolio of over $700 million in real estate. We'll talk about his story with Rich Dad Poor Dad, how he was actually one of the ones to buy one of the first copies of Rich Dad Poor Dad in a car wash. That car wash led to him making millions of dollars in passive income. We talk a lot about how investing in real estate allowed him to have the freedom to practice orthopedic surgery how he wanted. It allowed him to be a better physician, a better husband, a better father, and allowed him to travel all over the world and make incredible memories due to the freedom that passive income offered him. At the end of the episode, we talk a little bit about what's called active patience. This is a term that he coined. You're going to want to stick around and listen to what that means. So without further ado, let's get to today's episode with Dr. Tom Burns. Hey, Dr. Burns, good evening. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great, Alex. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. So excited to have you on and excited. This is the first episode of the Physicians and Properties Podcast. I couldn't ask for a better guest for this first episode. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come on. I think that the physicians in the group are really going to learn a lot from you. I learned a lot about freedom and investing in real estate specifically. So really appreciate the opportunity.
Me as well. I'm really honored to be your first guest, and hopefully we can get something to really get people started on their quest to create a little bit of freedom.
Well, freedom is a big thing that we talk about with Physicians and Properties. I think freedom, not only financial freedom, but also time freedom and life freedom. And I think investing and investing in real estate gives you the opportunity to practice freedom and live life how you want. And I know we're going to get into that a lot during this episode. But if you don't mind just kind of giving the listeners a little bit more about your journey and the medicine and real estate and investing and, of course, the purple book as well. What an incredible story.
Wow, that's a lot. I'll do some of it. And if I miss it, you can kind of prompt me again, but nothing special. When I was young, I was an athlete and kind of had those dreams of doing that kind of thing. And it didn't take too long before I found out that nobody's going to pay me to do what I did. So I was pretty good in school and decided if I wanted to still hang out with athletes, I'd become a doctor and an orthopedic surgeon and a sports guy. That's what I did. Went to kind of played my way through college for part of it and then buckled down and did well enough to get into med school, finished med school. Did a residency and then did a fellowship in sports medicine. Since this is for docs, everybody knows we'll do our med school and then you go to your residency. So orthopedic residency was 5 years. We're trained on the apprenticeship model, just like plumbers and blacksmiths and people like that. You work under somebody that's been doing it for a long time. And so those people that are teaching us are supposed to be us 10, 20, 30 years in the future. And so I'm kind of following the plan that we all follow as doctors. And I start noticing that the doctors are complaining a lot. I know this was a long time ago, so they were probably complaining less than they are now, but they were complaining, right? These guys made a lot of money. These were the attendings. They were complaining, often sometimes on their second or third marriage. We're the residents, the indentured servants, so we're there all night, but these guys were sometimes in the hospital 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. So this happened enough times that I tell people it was a touch from God or just a blind squirrel finding a nut, but I thought, you know what? I don't necessarily want these guys' lives. I don't want their money if I have to have their life. My wife and I had always talked about enjoying life, enjoying the journey. And so I didn't want to be them in 20 years. And so I figured maybe I need some sort of income coming in that's not correlated with meds. I didn't know what it was going to be. I looked at a lot of stocks. I didn't have the smarts and didn't have two nickels to rub together anyway to trade stocks. I couldn't start a business. And it eventually fell on real estate. It moves slow. You can do it part-time, full-time. You can do it with partners. You don't have to be the first one in or first one out or last one in. So that's what I decided at the time. Now, if anybody remembers residency, you got no time and no money. So that was what I started with. No time, no money, no experience, no networked. And so I did what I could. I learned. I read some things. I talked to people. There wasn't much on the internet. You know, we didn't have a computer back then. I hate to age myself like that, but no computer, right? So no Google. And so I learned what I could. I went and did a fellowship out in your neck of the woods, out in Vail, Colorado. Came home and had to go out to Lake Placid to do some work with the Olympic Committee. So I was still not getting paid. I came home, started getting paid as a private practice guy. It wasn't a ton, but it was enough to pay off a few bills. And then I did the only thing I knew to learn stuff, which was to go do it. So I'd learned enough. I'd learned a little bit of the math. So I decided I was going to go buy something. And that's what I did. So pretty inauspicious start. If you want me to tell the story, I'll tell it. Yeah. I decided to buy something. And so back then, man, I hate saying that. But anyway, I looked in the newspaper. There was a classified section for real estate. I looked on there and I looked for things for sale. And I was looking kind of in the student area. And so I found a condominium for sale, called the number on it, set up an appointment, went with this guy. We looked at it. By then, I knew I'd learned a little bit. I figured out how to do the numbers, you know, the expenses. I figured it was probably going to work and make me some money. I was looking for cash flow. I wanted money that came in that didn't require me to work. So I said, well, I like it. I'd like to buy it. What do we do? And he said, well, you got to put in a contract. I said, well, awesome. How do I do that? He goes, I'll do that. So the guy puts in a contract. We win the deal. He says, you won the deal. I said, awesome. What do I do next? He said, well, you got to get some insurance, you got to get an inspection, you got to get a loan unless you're paying cash. And of course, I was first year doctor. I didn't have that much cash. So I said, of course, I'm going to get a loan. So I said, how do you do all that? And so he said, well, I'll get an inspection, call your insurance guy who'll help you out with the insurance, and then, you know, go talk to a banker and get a loan. And I called this banker friend that I'd met somewhere and I said, hey, I'm buying something. I'm supposed to get money from you. So what do I do? He goes, well, you got to give me a couple of years of tax statements. You got to give me a personal financial statement, statement of cash flows, things like that. I said, awesome. What's a personal financial statement? You know, all this stuff. I fought with him. He wanted a lot of information that I didn't want to give him. We fought through all this. I eventually got the property. And that property, it was making me about $150 a month in cash flow. Not really life-changing for a new orthopedic surgeon, but it's pretty cool. That happened. That goes on for a month or two. That money would come in no matter what I did, right? So I called the guy up. By the way, the guy who showed me the property was a broker and a property manager. So I already knew there was no way I was going to manage property. So he became my property manager. I called him up. I said, I like this. You got any more? He goes, sure. I got one down the street. We went and looked at that one. Same deal. Looked like it was going to make some money. Took less time to do that. I learned some more lessons for sure, but it took less time because I'd learned so much on the first one. And that one worked out pretty well. I said, you got another? He said, yeah. So I bought another and another and another. And before I knew it, I knew that market like the back of my hand. I could tell you in 5 minutes if it was a good deal, it was going to make money. I bought one sight unseen. I bought one for no money down. They actually wrote me a check at closing. The only reason I did that was because I knew the market better than the seller and the selling broker. So they didn't understand the prices. So I got it for a pretty good deal. So I don't recommend no money down. But that's how I started. Really not pretty stuff. So these are single condominium units. I don't really like condos, but that's where I started. But that's where I learned everything. Just to finish it out over time, people knew I would close. So they brought me deals. People knew I was buying these things. So they wanted to partner together. So instead of buying one at a time, we started buying more at a time. And over time, I ran out of money. So we were doing bigger deals. So I had to ask people, friends and family and folks I knew, hey, do you want to put some money in this deal? And over time, developed a pretty large list of investors, and the projects grew, and they grew from that small little condominium to bigger stuff. And same kind of process, just more zeros. And so over time, that cash flow with the little condos and the other deals I did over time eventually was making me more money than my orthopedic practice. And so that did provide a good bit of freedom. I know that was a long story. I'm sorry it was so long.
No, that was a great story. I really appreciate you sharing that with us and kind of going from the start. I agree. I think as doctors, we're trained on, you know, see one, do one, teach one. And I think the biggest part or the real learning is when you do the one, and then ultimately we end up doing way more. And I think listening to your story, you really took action. You weren't 100% sure what to do. You just pulled one up on the newspaper, found that condo, realized this is going to make me some money, whether I sleep, whether I'm operating on someone's knee, and you did it. And then you continued to stack going forward. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but that first one is always the hardest one, and figuring out how to continue to buy more and get started and learn along the way, that really the hardest step is just initially getting started, initially taking action.
Yeah, it's jumping in the water is the hardest part. The first one's scary and you don't know what you're doing. You wonder if you're going to lose money, all that stuff that everybody says, don't you get scared? I bet you don't get scared, Tom. Absolutely, I do all the time. But you learn so much. And I was purely after cash flow. I wasn't looking for capital appreciation. I wanted money coming in from something outside medicine. And now, like I said, that $150 wasn't life-changing, but it was addicting. That's a good addiction. I wanted more. I wanted another hit. And, you know, that was well over 25 years ago. And I've never seen the inside of that place since the day I toured it. It keeps making me money. It paid itself off, keeps making money. Now it makes, you know, $1,200 a month in free. So
they sure do, which is incredible. So many different ways to make money in real estate. I think about Brandon Turner said it a lot on the Bigger Pockets podcast, talking about the little oil wells, and each house is a oil well that just keeps pumping out money no matter what.
Yep.
And so that's the beauty of real estate. That's the beauty of cash flow, and just an incredible thing. I have some long-term investments, a couple of short-term rentals, and then we're invested in assisted living homes, which is our primary focus right now. But cash flow, really, that's the thing for me. I feel like cash flow really gives you the freedom to practice medicine how you want, to be a better doctor, ultimately, to serve patients better, and to get to do things that you really enjoy, like spending time with your family and traveling, both of which I know are really important things to you as well. And I'm sure we'll get to that. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Rich Dad, Poor Dad and the fact that it sounds like you bought the first copy or one of the first copies. Is that correct?
That is true. It was sometime after I bought the first few condos and I knew I wanted money coming in that I didn't have to really work for. I didn't know what to call it. I was here in Austin, Texas. My family went up to Dallas to go visit family. So I'm the only one in town. So what I do when they're gone is I did errands. I did stuff that needed to get done. My truck was dirty. It needed to be cleaned. Took it to the local car wash. It's one of those deals where you hand them, you tell them which one you want, and off you go. And they go do their thing, and you go in, check out. And so I get to the desk, and back on this shelf back there was this hand-painted sign that said books for sale. And the purple and gold book, and I could see the word Rich on, you know. And at the time, I was reading a lot of books like that. I was reading a lot of self-help and real estate, and personal development books, whatever you want to call it. My wife used to call it your You Can Do It books. So I'd read anything. I said, hey, let me see that. And she brings it over and it says, what the rich teach their kids about money and the poor and middle class do not. And I figured, anybody that's that cocky to put that kind of title on there, I'll read that. So my granddad was a stack, I don't know, couple dozen books. There's a stack of them. So I took it home and tossed it on my office desk and did what I did at home. And about 11:30 at night, I was going to bed and I stopped by. I'd never even opened the book. I just grabbed to read a page or two to see what I was going to read, what kind of book it was. It was kind of interesting. I leaned against the desk. I read a few more pages, sat down just to read, you know, a couple more pages or a chapter. And 4 hours later, I finished the book. It was literally 3:30 in the morning, and I read the book straight through. Called a friend of mine about 7 o'clock the next morning and said, I just read the best business book I've ever read in my life. And he laughed at me and said, sure you did. And I gave him a copy a week later and he goes, yep, you sure did. Didn't know who this unknown author was. It was Kawasaki or Kiyosaki. We don't know. Nobody ever heard of him. And so we wanted to call the publisher and called the number for the publisher. And the person on the other end of the phone was Robert Kiyosaki. Turns out that he said the deal was he had self-published the book. It was designed. And he'll tell you this, self-published 1,000 books. This is not like now, like in Amazon, you just upload a manuscript, they'll print it on demand. He had to go to 1,000 books printed. It was designed as a brochure to sell his game, the cash flow quadrant, or the game, the cash flow game. And so he printed up these books because no publisher would take it. Nobody was buying any of them. And so he sent them to his buddy in Austin who had this car wash. He said, you're going to sell books for me. The guy said, you don't sell books in a car wash. He said, well, you are now. So I guess they were good enough friends. And I had gone back the next day and bought the rest of the books because I like to hand out books, right? So we said, how many books do you have? He goes, how many did you buy? We said, we bought all of them. He goes, I got 976 left because he hadn't sold a single book. So
wow.
We flew out to Scottsdale and Paradise Valley, met with Robert. He taught us how to play cash flow and I started to get to know him back there in the summer of 97. He said, we're getting ready to go to the airplane. And he starts loading up books from the trunk of his car. He starts giving me these books. I'm like, dude, I don't want to take all your books. He goes, nobody's buying them anyway. Which is kind of funny, 44 million copies later.
So yeah.
We've been friends for a long time. He just came by and spoke at my mastermind that we had in Scottsdale just a couple of weeks ago. That's kind of the genesis of the Purple Book story. That's where I learned the term passive income. And that's where I formed my long-term business plan, basically using his income statement and balance sheet.
Absolutely. I think we all who have read that book have a similar story. I didn't buy mine at a car wash. I did buy it on Amazon. Probably, you know, the 25th million copy that he sold. I remember I was going home actually to visit my family. I was in residency and I remember sitting at the airport, bought the book and was flying back from Florida to Virginia and started reading it on the plane or before actually sitting there in the lobby. And I just could not put it down, got on the plane, finished the whole book, same thing, got off. And I was like, oh my goodness, like assets and liabilities and passive income, like this is life changing. And I'd already had kind of the idea of investing in real estate. My dad planted that seed when I went to residency in Richmond, Virginia. And he said, how about you buy a duplex with your signing bonus for the Air Force and fix it up during residency? Well, I did just like any kid probably does. And I didn't listen to my dad and then really regretted it. But he planted that seed and he didn't know it. And then I read Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that was the game changer for me. And I knew, you know, right then and there, it was time to start really focusing on building up these assets and buying real estate. And so luckily had started that process when I was in residency and was the same way, just kept consuming content, consuming different books and learning more and more. But Rich Dad, Poor Dad really set that foundation. And I think your book, Why Doctors Don't Get Rich, is really the Rich Dad, Poor Dad for doctors, you know? And I think that the information that's in here, you talk about all kinds of different types of investing. Of course, focus a lot on real estate, which we'll dive into. But I really think every doctor, every resident, specifically, even med students should read this book because we don't get that financial education in med school and we don't get that financial education in residency.
No, we get none. I had zero. I knew nothing when I started. I literally have a slide when I give talks. Here's what I started with. It's a big zero, nothing. So the earlier you can get something like that, the earlier the light bulb goes on, the more time you have to affect your plan. And time's probably the best real estate and investing hack in the world because you can make mistakes, recover from them. So I've actually offered that book to a number of med schools and we're getting them out a little bit. I told them I'd just give them to them for the educational purpose.
It's a great book. Thanks for writing it. What kind of led you to writing Why Doctors Don't Get Rich?
All right. So it wasn't my fault. I was with Robert in Scottsdale in his office eating lunch. And so he puts out a book about every year, right? Or he was at the time. And so I'm like, so, hey, what's your next book? He tells me, and then through a mouth of salad, he pokes a fork at me and says, you should write a book. And I said, no, I'm not going to write a book. He goes, nah, you got a story. You ought to write a book. I said, yeah. All right, if you can do it, I can do it. And so it was his fault. And he goes, and what? You can call it Why Doctors Don't Get Rich. So he came up with the title. I tested that title for 2 years while I wrote that book. Never could come up with it. I mean, he's a master at that kind of stuff. Now, he did not do the subtitle, but I just couldn't find a better name. And so I stuck with it. So it was his fault. And so I got on the plane, decided, all right, I'll do this. I sat down and wrote, and I didn't use a ghostwriter. I didn't go through it fast. It literally took me a couple of years. By the time I'd finished writing kind of each chapter, I got an editor. We were going to put it together. By then, I didn't like everything I'd written in chapter one, so I rewrote every chapter and handed it to him. But I wanted it to be a source of hope and guidance for anybody that wanted to create kind of their best life. That's what it's for. There's no business plan behind it. It was just, hey, okay, I'll write a book. So it became sort of a passion project and took a long time. I skipped church a few times if I was having good ideas that morning because I was working full time. Well, my version of full time, so which wasn't really full time.
That's great. It's an incredible guide for folks. Definitely highly recommend everyone listening to this to get a copy of Why Doctors Don't Get Rich. How, Dr. Burns, did you balance everything with real estate, being an orthopedic surgeon, working for the ski team?
It sounds like magic and it wasn't. It's priorities. And I told you way back, wife and I talked about not having fun, right? And fun for me is being with family. So I've got two kids. I don't have a ton of them. So we could still play one-on-one. We didn't have to go to a zone, but we had two kids. I didn't want to miss anything. I already kind of had that thought process, but I was young. I was a young, brand new, and a 2.5-year-old when I started practice. Actually, pregnant wife of 2.5-year-old when I started practice. So I kind of thought I wanted to be with family. I mean, not kind of, I knew I did. But then I talked to an older doctor. He was only 10 years older than me. He was one of the guys that all the hospitals wanted. Super busy practice, bunch of patients, doing a ton of surgeries. It was a hot commodity. He looked at me and he goes, I spent 10 or 15 years building this practice. I built a nice big orthopedic practice. He said, but I didn't spend that much time with my kids. He says, now they're teenagers. They don't want anything to do with me. And I think I wrote about it in the book. He literally had a tear in his eye and that just iced it. There was no way I was going to be that guy in 10 years. So it was priorities. I started earlier than most of the other docs. Mm-hmm. I might start my surgery at 6:30 instead of 7:30, but I was home at 3:30 to take my kids off the bus. And so I just focused 100% on what I was doing when I was doing it. So I was 100% doctor when I did that. But maybe when I came out of the room, I might have switched hats and got on the phone and talked to somebody about a real estate property. Or when I left the office, I focused. So my real estate time was after I finished surgery or got out of the office and on weekends. But over time, as the passive income very slowly increased, I had a little more time. I took an afternoon off here and there. So that's how I balanced the real estate and the doctor world and the family world. So it worked out. None of us do it perfect, but I spent a lot of time with the kids.
That's great. That's inspirational. I have a 2.5-year-old. So his name's Jack. He's the best. And I feel the same way. I just really want to spend as much time as I can with him and with my wife and be the one that's tucking him into bed every night as often as I can, which is why this podcast was so late. And I appreciate your flexibility with getting the schedule. But, family is what it's all about for me. And I want that freedom so that I can be the best dad possible and not miss the sporting events. Personally, I really hope that my son plays baseball. I'm a big baseball fan, but we'll see what happens. But regardless, I just want to be there for him because he's going to remember that. And we only get one chance at being a dad. And so that was something I really picked up in the book was family was a priority. Going to the wrestling matches with your son was a priority. And I think we have to make that choice to do that. And I think the best thing we can do as fathers is just show up. That's what they're going to remember. That's what we need to do.
I tell you, that's true. And you know what, Alex? Jack's going to be a smelly 17 or 18-year-old one day and not going to have as much to do with you, that sort of thing. But they come back. My son that was not yet born when I started practice is quite a bit older now, and they get introspective. They'll tell you that they watch what you do, not as much of what you say. So I'm real proud of the relationship we have with him. Like I said, I haven't done life perfectly, but that was a priority, and it meant a lot to me. So I would let other things fall by the wayside if it infringed on family time.
Absolutely. I know they appreciate that. Did any of them decide to kind of follow your path into medicine or real estate?
Yeah, but it's crazy. So my daughter's the older one, and she is a doctor. She's a pediatrician now, and she went into private practice for a while, and now she's doing a fellowship and to be a pediatric hospitalist.
Great.
I gave her both sides of medicine. They saw me, and by the time they were cognizant of what was going on, I was already working less than most of my colleagues. I had a PA for 13 years before I retired. He never worked a 40-hour week. So they saw that, but I made sure she knew what was going on and the trend in medicine as far as salaries and corporate infringement, things like that, loss of autonomy. So she took it all and decided to be a doctor. My son went from state wrestling champion to MMA fighter to music major to touring musician, firefighter, and now he wants to be a physician's assistant. So Lord knows why they did all that. So yeah, it looks like both of them are going to be in some sort of medicine.
That's great. Wow. He's done a little bit of everything. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to kind of get your take, if you would, on and just kind of what your thoughts are on being a physician in this day and age. You mentioned it a little bit, kind of the lack of autonomy, the corporate oversight, what that looks like, and kind of how financial freedom and investing in real estate, how that helped you be a better doctor, take better care of patients, and how you feel like that piece of the puzzle can really help you from a physician perspective and take care of your patients better.
Great question. I think things are way different than when I started. They're probably different than when I stopped practicing. Last number I saw was 74% of docs are employed by some larger entity, whether it be PE firm or hospital or a large doctor group. That's a big number compared to what we had. The norm was, you know, you're part of a practice. That is going to put a squeeze on autonomy, decision-making ability, freedom, things like that. I've never minced words the fact that know how to be doctors and business people don't. And so the numbers matter to them. The world is numbers. So, you know, we're not going to win that battle unless you've got some kind of leverage, which is what you talked about, which is having some degree of financial freedom. We talk about this term financial freedom, but it can be financial less stress, meaning you don't have to cover your whole salary to feel like you've made it. You can just have some passive income coming in that gives you an afternoon off or does something to take a little stress off. That makes you smile more, makes you a better doctor. But as you move up the scale and the passive income, you take care of more and more of your expenses, more of your living expenses. It gives you more freedom. It gives you more the ability to either take time off or to tell your clinic manager or boss or whatever they're called these, no, I don't want to do that. I'm going to do this. And they say, well, no, can't. You know, you've got options. There are options. Well, the more you make, maybe you can go out and do things on your own. So it's that control. And I admitted at the beginning of this program that I didn't want anybody telling me what to do. So, man, I would work really hard to make sure I had lots of leverage so I could do it how I wanted to. And I'll tell you, back when I started, it wasn't that painful. Doctors got paid a lot. Docs didn't go into real estate. They didn't do extra things very often. I was told by one guy, you should focus more on medicine. I said, I focus 100% on medicine when I'm in front of my patient, but I also focus on my outside work when I'm doing that. And I said, I'm probably working twice as hard as you are. It made me a better doctor. Then all that hard work that I did burning the candle at both ends, it made me a better doc. I could spend more time with my patients. I didn't have to care if they paid me. I'll tell you, Alex, I worked for 12 and a half years not needing the money. In the last 4 years of my practice, I worked for free. I did not get paid the last 4 years. The reason I did it wasn't Mother Teresa. I just liked what I did. I enjoyed my practice because I eliminated all the annoying crap that comes with the business of medicine and all that. So it was a joy to go into work. I made just enough to cover overhead. My physician assistant made more than me every year. But that's a really nice feeling. And I could spend 5 minutes with somebody or I could spend an hour with somebody if they wanted to. So it does make you a better doctor. It reduces your stress. And stress does not make good doctors. We're all put under a lot of stress. So relax, docs. You can just feel it. The patients feel it. They will be better for it. Like I said, I think I said it in the book. Just think, we see 10,000 patients in our lifetime. And so just imagine if we had 1,000 doctors seeing 10,000 patients. It'd be 1 million people that are much better off than they are by seeing somebody that treats them like a number. Money's not the only thing in the world, but it's a tool that can be used for good. I'll tell you what.
I couldn't agree more. I think about it in my practice as a family medicine physician. You know, we're really hit hard with numbers, numbers, numbers. And I think back to specifically kind of preventative medicine, especially obesity counseling, for example. And I remember in particular, I had a patient and she was about 300 pounds, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, hypertension on a bunch of medications. And she came in in our 20-minute appointment slot, which is really like 5 minutes after everything's said and done. And I saw that the patient after her canceled. So I was like, great, I have some extra time with her. So I really just spent the time talking with her and just getting to know her as a person and figuring out what are those barriers that are keeping her from exercising and from losing weight. It was an incredible conversation. And I told her, I said, look, you're not exercising at all right now. How about you just get up during a commercial and start just walking in place and then try walking one block around the neighborhood and then two blocks. These little habits are just going to compound. Long story short, a year later, she's lost about 100 pounds. She's awesome. Run multiple 5Ks. She's off of all her medications. Her A1C is like 5.2, 5.3. But the coolest part about that whole thing was she said, you know what, Dr. Slow? The best part of this was I went home and I told my mom, who was in a similar medical condition as me, what you told me, just get started, just walk one block. And now she's also off of all her medications and she's lost a bunch of weight. And you know, I think back to that. We all wish we have all this time to counsel. And I think that's a perfect example. If I only had 5-10 minutes to talk to her about all these issues and didn't have that extra 20 minutes, I don't know if I would have taken the time to say that and to really get to know her and figure out what would help ignite her and get her to exercise and improve her life forever at this point. And so I think that's a small example of exactly what you're saying, having the time, having the financial freedom to then have the time to see less patients, spend more time with them. I personally think that's what's going to change medicine in the future. That's what's going to change healthcare outcomes in the future. And I'm a little biased as a primary care doctor, but I think that, you know, preventative medicine and primary care is really where we're going to make an impact in America long-term overall for the health of this country. So that's my little tangent there, but I think about that a lot. And that's one of the drivers for me to try and get as much passive income as possible. So in the future, I'll have those opportunities to dictate my schedule and control that a little bit more to have more outcomes like that.
That is a fantastic story. The time to have the empathy and get to know somebody. And people just want to be heard or they want to be talked to. And so it's a wonderful thing. I spent a lot of time with folks. There are people that are good friends now and gone on hunting trips. I met them by walking in the room saying, hey, I'm Tom. I hear you got a sore knee. So that's a fantastic story. And I agree with you. I think primary care is more medicine 3.0, the prevention rather than treating symptoms and that. So I agree with you. I think the prevention education is where the results are going to be born from. So
absolutely. Awesome. Well, let's get back into real estate. If you don't mind, what are you guys working on now? I know you're kind of involved in the commercial multifamily space and have multiple investments across all kinds of different investment options. But I know commercial multifamily, if I'm right, is what you focus on. So what's the portfolio look like for you now? And what are you investing in at this point?
Yeah, you know, personal portfolio, I still have all those student condos. I don't sell anything unless I have to. And I've got another group. I've got a portfolio of multifamily in the Southeast, but my company, Presario, we're primarily developers or sort of private equity development. And we bought a few things, but we focus mostly on development. And nowadays, mostly in Texas. We had multiple states, but pretty much divested of most of that. And there's enough business for us in Texas. We don't want to be or need to be the biggest in town. So we are focusing on market rate and some affordable housing and some age-restricted housing for 62 plus or 55 plus, just depending on the product and the location. Through 2021 and early 2022, there was a very large appetite for multifamily properties and cap rates really got squeezed, which for those that don't get it, the lower the cap rate, the higher price they're paying for your property. So we sold a lot of our portfolio, pretty much anything that was available to be sold. And three of those were on long-term 40-year fixed rate debt. So those were designed to be long-term holds, but the numbers we were offered were just silly, Alex. So that being said, about 15 months ago, right before interest rates started going up, we didn't like what we saw. And so we trimmed back our pipeline and did not start as many projects as we thought we would on purpose, and which was a good decision. So we have, we've probably got 1,200 to 1,500 units under construction now. It stretches primarily, I'm in Texas. There's a big highway called Interstate 35. Most of our stuff's up and down Interstate 35. We stretch from North Texas all the way down to San Antonio, and then a few of them over in Houston. It's kind of the Golden Triangle, they call it. The Texas Triangle, they call it, where the majority of our population lives. So we've got an age-restricted property up in North Texas. We've got two built-to-rent projects in Houston and another 300-unit complex going up outside of Houston. We got 400 units going up in a little town just north of San Antonio. We got another 35 acres in a town pretty close to Elon Musk's factory that we haven't decided what we're going to do with that yet. We're sitting on it right now. So, but we're sticking with multifamily. We do a 5-property portfolio we're building that covers Alabama and Texas. And this is going to sound strange, but it's actually extended stay hotels, which sounds pretty weird for a multifamily guy. But if you think about these, they're like a hybrid between a hotel you vacation in and a workforce housing. Put the two together, 40% of the people that stay in an extended stay for over 30 days. It's where, you know, you're in medicine. I was in surgery. We had traveling nurses, traveling techs, locum tenens, doctors. They got to stay somewhere. They need to stay somewhere nice. So they have to stay with a place with a kitchen and all that. So they'll stay at an extended stay hotel. They'll stay a month, 3 months, 6 months. So that has been an asset class that did very well during the pandemic. It didn't go down like hotels did. The numbers are increasing. It's only 10% of the hotel market. So all these metrics we looked at, but this is our first foray into the extended stay. So we're doing 5 of them across 2 states. And if that works out well, we got another 4-pack that we're going to do here in Central Texas. So different stuff. You can build them faster and they cash flow nicely. They've got nice expense ratios. So we like it.
That's great. I love that the first foray is 5 extended stay hotels. That's awesome. We invest in residential assisted living homes. So definitely interested in hearing a little bit more about your age-restricted properties that you're doing. Is that kind of assisted living, or are you building out assisted living kind of from the ground up where it'd be stepwise increases in care to more of a nursing home facility? Or what's that look like for you, if you don't mind me asking?
So neither, but that's what it sounds like. Okay. So and real familiar with residential assisted living. So, and there's one just on the other side of town from us, but ours is a market. That's a 212 unit market rate apartment complex, class A apartment complex. Very nice, actually. It's age restricted. So the loan is set up like this. So one of the residents has to be 62 years of age. You can have a 62 year old person married to a 25 year old if you want. That's okay. But we build it a little differently. And this is a HUD product. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the FHA HUD debt, which is housing and urban development. It's a little different than standard debt. You buy a house, you get a 30-year mortgage, right? You buy apartments, you get fixed rate debt for 10 years, but maybe it amortizes over 30 years. This product is government backed and it's 40 years of fixed amortization. So the longer your amortization is, that increases your cash flow. It's a very stable loan, very nice. Tends to be back in the day, used to be just a little bit lower than the agencies, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, insurance companies, things like that. They've tightened up a little bit since then. You get a little boost if you make it green, which is just low flow toilets and good windows, things like that. So it's a HUD project designed for a long-term home, and one of the residents has to be 62 or older. So the apartment itself has a few different things. It's got a hair salon, bocce ball. It's got a theater. It's got some open areas where people can congregate. Doesn't necessarily have the workspace like you'd have for a standard class A. You know, people want places to work together. So a lot of the places we build now will have a workspace fully tricked out with Wi-Fi. We built some of our places with studios and podcast rooms in the apartments. So the generation that does that is going to have everything they need at the apartment. So it's actually a market rate apartment. You just got to be a little older to live there.
Sounds like a great place to live. If you didn't have the age restriction, I think I'd be signing up.
Well, we'd get you into the hair salon for free if you want.
There you go. I do need it. I got to get a haircut here soon to stay in Air Force regulation. So, well, thanks for sharing all that you're working on. You know, definitely at the end, we want to share how folks can reach out to you and learn more about these investments and potential opportunities to invest with you. You have incredible wealth of knowledge and experience, and I'm sure some great opportunities there. Tom, I want to be respectful of your time. I had 2 questions for you. If you don't, a lot of travel You wrote about some incredible adventures in your book, but I was curious to hear kind of what's your favorite place that you've traveled to or adventure that you've had during these travel experiences?
Wow. Yeah. I just got back from Panama about 3 days ago, and I was in India a couple months ago, but I do have my two. It's not the place. I love Africa. I love anywhere in the wilderness. I do things that put me in really weird places that normal, sane people wouldn't go. It's just nice to be out there where nobody else wants to go. But I'll tell you my two favorite trips for different reasons. One was Antarctica.
Wow.
Didn't think I was going to like it. It's just a fabulous trip. It's just a unique place and very few people go there. And just the crossing over the Drake Passage is an experience in and of itself. But that was really something to see the whales, the penguins, the ice floes and the seals. And yes, whatever. It was awesome. It was really something. And my second favorite trip was a pretty exotic place. It was the Grand Canyon, but it was because I spent 6 days sleeping in a tent on sandbars with my adult son and a bunch of other friends. We all booked up all 16 slots on a trip down to the Grand Canyon. We spent time and hiked out from the bottom. So there's sort of a different reason that was my favorite trip because I was with my son, but every place has got its uniqueness. India was fabulous, just a different culture. I've been to every sub-Saharan country in Africa, and I love every one of them. I'm going back in about 5 weeks. So Africa's awesome. The Eastern Europe, all the stands, Kazakhstan and Tajikistan, they're super different as well. So everything's different. So it's hard for me to pick a favorite.
That's great. I love traveling. You just experience in different cultures. I spent about 6 weeks in Zimbabwe on a missions trip and a medical mission trip working at a hospital there. And it was just an incredible experience. We did get to go to Victoria Falls, which is unbelievable. Nice. Looked like a green screen. And then we got to do a safari in Wangi, a national park where, unfortunately, where Cecil the Lion was shot by that dentist quite some time ago. But it was just unbelievable. I'll never forget riding through the Jeep and looking out. It was sunset. And there were all these elephants just running through and the sun was setting and birds were flying and it was just magical. I mean, just unbelievable. And not to mention the population, you know, the folks in Zimbabwe were so nice, especially coming to the clinic, coming to the hospital, were so appreciative of the care that we were able to provide. And they were walking days, hours just to get there, spending all the money that they had just to get to this hospital because they knew they were going to get some of the best care that they could get in Zimbabwe. And I could talk forever about how amazing that experience was and the different things that we saw, crocodile bites and puff adder bites and, you know, different traumas. And it was just an incredible experience. And I was just having this conversation with my wife. I was like, we got to get to Africa. She's never been, and I just want to get back there. So I have a soft spot in my heart for Africa for sure.
Well, and you mentioned one thing about travel that people sometimes don't think of, but it gives you perspective. And it'll give your kids perspective if you take them around, because we complain about the fact that we can't stream some movie some night, or we can't get the football game, or you know what I mean? And when you go to a place where people are wondering where their next meal's going to come from, it gives you a little perspective on what we might want to be complaining about, and it really helps the kids to see that. That's what travel has done for me. It just gives you a little bit of worldly perspective, and you realize that you're kind of just a small piece on this rock, and you know, you just got to do your best to make it as good a place as possible. See how you contribute a little bit of what you've got to make it a better place. Leave it better than you started with.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it's all about. I remember patients sleeping outside the hospital for a couple of nights waiting just to have the opportunity to be seen. And I think about the patients that get really angry at me for being 5 minutes behind. And just that perspective is so interesting.
We need to get our patients to get that perspective.
I don't think they'd appreciate it that much, but just like you said, it just really opens your eyes to just the beauty of this world. And there's just so much vastness and greatness and just so much to experience. You know, it's another thing that I think that passive income and investing offers you, that freedom to explore this world, the time to explore this world and really get that perspective and gain those experiences. I don't want to be practicing until I'm 65 years old and then now it's time to start traveling or now it's time to start spending time with my family. I want to do that now while I'm young and healthy and can have those experiences, share them with my wife and share them with my son. You know, love traveling and love the opportunities that passive income can provide and investing can provide to get more experiences like that.
Yeah, it's mad. It really does. It gives you choices. And what was my trainer told me today? He goes, you know, every man dies, but not every man lives. And that's I thought that was a great quote. Live now, do the best you can. It's a great world. It's a great ride going through life. And you put it really well. I think we all deserve our chance to kind of have the life we dream of.
Absolutely. Completely agree. Last question I had for you is just what's one piece of advice that you would give to a new intern starting residency? We're getting close to July 1st. So what's that piece of advice?
Give your best to whatever you choose. Certainly give your best. I tell my kids, just give 100% no matter what you do. If you're taking out the trash, give 100%. If you're doing schoolwork, give 100%. That's one thing. Give yourself time to let compounding work. Always try to learn something every day. Try to be a little better Tom every day than I was yesterday. And sometimes the mistakes I make are what makes me a better person the next day, and I make tons of them. But try to do something to just further you better. It's not all just money. There's your health and your spirituality, your relationships and your marriages and your kids. So just try to do something every day to make it better. Be patient. I know we all want stuff now, so I like to call it exercise active patience. Do something every day, but realize that sometimes nature and compounding takes some time, but it will surprise you how quickly things happen if you just keep at it and don't quit.
That is perfect advice. Couldn't ask for anything any better. Active patience is a great term I haven't heard before, but I'm going to start using. So thanks for sharing that. Tom, what are some ways that folks can reach out to you? I know we have richdoctor.com, of course, have the book that we need everyone to read. And what are some other ways that folks can reach out to you and learn more about what you're doing?
So yeah, the website for sure, richdoctor.com. And I tell you, if anybody out there has actually read my book, you know, I like hearing stories. If it's a bad story, like, hey, your book was terrible, go ahead, send me an email, tell me about it. If you've got a good story related to the book, send an email to hello@richdoctor.com. I get those. And I'll answer you back. I love hearing the stories. I've got so many that I've heard, and it just, I don't know, it's probably narcissistic, but it sure does make me feel good when I find out that the book's done some good out there, because that's what it was written for.
That's great. The book's done a lot of good. I hope you get a lot more emails from this community as well about the impact that that's had on their life. I really appreciate your time, Dr. Burns. This was incredible, and I know added a lot of value. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap things up?
No, you can do it. Peter Drucker says we overestimate what we can do in a year. We underestimate what we can do in 5 years. And just keep at it. You see people on stage and in books or whatever, and you think, man, I could never do that. I promise you guys, I had nothing and just banged my head against the wall a bunch of times and got lucky and ended up in a reasonable spot. So I think everybody out there can do it bigger, better, and faster than me. Still quit.
Well, thanks for your humility. Thanks for your knowledge. Thanks for your time. I'm Dr. Alex Slow here with Dr. Tom Burns. This is another episode of Physicians and Properties. Signing off.
Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to this, I'm assuming you got value from it. So I need your help specifically. My 2-year vision with this podcast is to help 100,000 physicians learn how investing in real estate can give you the freedom to practice medicine and live life how you want. There are two main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you can please leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to 1 to 2 friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the physicians that we want to reach. Thanks in advance, and talk to you on the next episode.
Please note that the information shared on this podcast is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered financial or medical advice. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the host and the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Department of Defense or the United States Air Force.